We welcome your ears to episode number 201 of the Triple Option with RBKD on the horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, streaming live all the time, when and wherever you may be, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. On today's show, we found maybe the dumbest criminals of all time. What were the 10 most streamed television shows during the pandemic? And we play off the Shirts and Skins' Last Song on Earth bit. Joined alongside by a lifetime Longhorn and card-carrying member of DBU, he's a mercenary mouthpiece, pop culture critic, and the one they call Blackstradamus. He is also the inventor of the Corona Kit. He is Rod Babers. Rod B, how are we doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank God it is still a football Friday. I appreciate the intro as always. So, man, let's get right to it. A lot of football to discuss.
No doubt about that. Also joined by a lifetime Longhorn and lifetime Austinite. He's so much of a man, they had to take one of his balls away to keep it fair for the rest of us. He knows where your IT guy's IT guy went to college. He is Kevin Dunn. KD, what's going on?
State championship on the line for Cedar Park tonight, Westlake tomorrow. We got pro football. This is going to be one of those last weekends, BK. You better enjoy it. I'm excited. It was nice to have to open up the DVR for all this stuff, knowing that I'm not going to have to open up the DVR maybe for a little while. But if Texas basketball continues, I will.
No doubt. Yeah. Always a bummer when football season starts to come to an end.
It really is. I say I want it 12 months out of the year. I don't. We talk about it that long. I want them to have a break.
I know, but
because you didn't play it like I didn't at that level. And so Rod knows that these guys need a break.
Oh, yeah.
Break.
Well, I want the XFL and the AAF, and I just want spring leagues
want
with
something.
Different players.
Right.
I just
there
want football 365 days out of the year.
So the next step, and I remember when game day was thought to be kind of a farce, and they were like, ESPN, it took them forever to do a pregame show. I used to have to watch Nick Charles and Fred Hickman on CNN, and they'd maybe have like a cut-in if they actually had a sports center in the late 80s and early 90s, and I'm looking for college football coverage, right? Sorry to rant here.
Yeah,
early,
I have no idea who you're talking about.
No, I was so in 93, Florida State Notre Dame, game of the century number 19, they said, we're actually going to do a one-hour show. We'll see if this works. And now they've got 4 hours, and they're pushing out Dick Clark every other segment, and his family's got to be thinking, what the hell is going on here? So I wish they would go to spring coverage. Rod, are you down for that? I mean, let's go the LHN practice coverage we did and do spring coverage for 25 programs, and I want stuff every day.
No, I agree with you. Especially, man, that's a great point. If you're Longhorn Network this spring, man, if the ratings would be through the roof if they just did exclusive behind-the-scenes stuff with Sark and him building the culture, and then that first spring with Sark as the head coach. That'd be, I mean, I'd be glued to the TV.
Well, they have to show the USC game at least 3 times a day, Rod B. So
it's contractual, though.
Maybe if there's enough time to throw Sark in there, we can. But Rose Bowl,
well, Sark
priority
would,
number one.
Sark would be in that.
That's true. Sark is in that. Is that what they're going to use as their excuse for why they're showing that game so much?
Although I saw a showing of that game, because contractually they have to show it. And guys, they cut out the 4th and 2 with Reggie Bush not on the field. Because it could be bad marketing for Sark.
Is that a real thing?
No, yeah. I'm kidding. Okay. I'm kidding. They didn't cut it out.
That would be impressive and unbelievable at the same time. I'll be here as well. I'm BK, Brad Kellner. Together, we are the Triple Option with RBKD, rocking and rolling until 7 o'clock here on the Horn. We appreciate y'all spending some or all of your Friday afternoon with us. Happy Friday to you and yours. Should be a beautiful weekend here in Central Texas. And yes, a lot of football to discuss going into the weekend. Let's start with some Longhorn football, guys. Some transfer portal news for this Texas football team. The guy who led the Longhorns in rushing in 2019 has officially entered the transfer portal. That is Keyonte Ingram. This news dropped after we got off the air last night. Not a huge surprise, considering we got reports back in December that Ingram had opted out of the 2020 season and was likely going to enter the transfer portal after the season came to an end. There was a thought by some that maybe if Stan Drayton had kept his job, then Keontae Ingram would consider staying as well. But obviously, that does not seem to be the case. You couple that with the rise of Bijan Robinson, it appears he is the number one running back for this team moving forward. So Rod B., Keontae Ingram did some good things here at Texas, but probably didn't quite live up to some of the expectations that he had as the number one running back in the state in the class of 2018. Your thoughts on Keontae Ingram reportedly putting his name into the transfer portal?
Yeah, we know how the transfer portal works, right? There's always a chance he could end up coming back from the transfer portal. It's just purgatory, so he could always come back, but the chances of that happening with Bijan Robinson and his emergence as the go-to weapon for the Longhorns coming up this season with a new staff, that's unlikely. I think he'll actually be a really good pickup for someone. I don't know exactly at what level he'll end up landing, but I think he'll end up being a really good pickup. We know he's a really good running back. There were just times where he was his own worst enemy, or times where he was way too hard on himself as a player. Then, of course, Tom Herman at times with the weird rotations. I think it may be hard for any running back to get themselves in the groove. Even Bucky's talked about that. So I think he'll actually be a nice pickup for some school. I think it won't be on the ilk of a blue blood or anything like that. It'll be at a lower level, but now I mean lower level of football. I mean, it could easily be Power 5. I'm just saying it won't be like a blue blood pickup for like an Ohio State. He's not going to do what Trey Sermon did, in my opinion. I think he'll end up going to, you know, some school where he knows that he can get playing time and he can showcase his talent. That's the most important thing for him. And I wish him the best. Actually, you know, I think he'll actually end up playing well somewhere else. Texas was just, it was a bad time. It was bad timing for him. He didn't play his best football on the biggest stages at times at Texas. And a fresh start would probably be really good for him.
Rod, I echo a lot of that. And I do think he's going to be a really good pickup. But most running backs, there's a lot of running backs, so just not Keontae Ingram, that could be in this situation. And you've got, the writing is on the wall. Bijan Robinson is, there are national guys that will talk about freshmen or sophomores and say, hey, in a couple years, you got to watch out for this guy. And I'm seeing that everywhere. The writing's on the wall. We all saw it with our eyes. He saw it with his eyes. He sees how talented Bijan is. And so it doesn't surprise me at all. And I think he could be a really good pickup. He could be a starting running back for a really good team next year, BK. For him, it's kind of weird because, you know, he looked really good at times his freshman year, and we were going through at that time the whole thing we've gone through with Tom Herman. How come he's not getting enough touches? Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
How come he's not getting enough touches? Are you kidding me? We don't have a lot of explosivity. We need this guy right now. Right? Yeah, it's a whole freshman thing. They're not sure about, you know, touches and all that and how much is it going to wear on them. And then sophomore year puts on the weight, and it did look like that took away some of that explosivity and the acceleration. And so then throughout his sophomore year, he kind of figures that out and starts to look like Keontae we thought he was going to be. And then this last year, you run into that. I mean, it's a quick 3 years, but he probably did not live up to what we thought, especially throughout his freshman year. But BK, he could be a really good find for someone on the open market.
Yeah, I think he could be. And I'm curious where he ends up, right? He's a Texas kid, so maybe he stays in the state of Texas, goes to an SMU or a University of Houston or a place like that. Or maybe, like Rod said, he could be sort of a lower-end Power 5 type of running back. He's done some really good things in his Texas career. You talked about his freshman year. He was the second leading rusher on the team that season. Now, the Longhorns did have Trey Watson, so it was good that they had an experienced, talented running back, which made it a little bit easier to stomach Keontae Ingram not getting that many carries. But sophomore year, you know, he was the leading rusher for Texas in 2019, battled some injuries throughout the course of the season. I mean, he had some great games as a Longhorn. There's no doubt about it, guys, but unfortunately, his career at Texas is going to be marred by some really, really bad moments at really inopportune times, right?
That's the key right there.
I mean, the LSU game, the dropped touchdown pass on fourth down and goal. Obviously this year, the fumble at the goal line against TCU that cost Texas the game. Then his very next carry, the week later, against Oklahoma, what does he do? He fumbles the ball and gets benched in that game. He had a game against Oklahoma in 2018 where he had 7 rushing yards. Last year against Iowa State, one of the biggest games of the season for Texas, he had 9 rushing yards. Last year against Oklahoma, he had 9 rushing yards. So He had a lot of great moments. He was really good in the bowl game against Utah. I think he had 5 or 6 100-yard games in his Texas career. He made an impact for sure. But, Rod, maybe that goes to your point where he was too hard on himself at times, and it feels like he kind of got in his own head every once in a while. But a lot of Texas fans, even though he did some good things and put up some good numbers, unfortunately for Keyonte Ingram, his legacy here is probably going to be marred by those bad moments I just talked about.
Yeah, and we saw the talent. You just talked about the games where he got a chance to realize his ceiling and actually had some consistency doing that at times. But when Texas needed him to be that feature running back, needed him to be the marquee guy, they needed a workhorse even for that game. It didn't seem like he could do that on the big stages, and that's unfortunate because I know he's got a really high ceiling. So I'm hoping, like you said, maybe, you know, a U of H or a lower level, I don't know, a Louisville, you know what I mean? I'm just trying to think of places because, like I said, Trey Sermon, when he went to Ohio State, that's a different type of transfer. I don't see him going to a Clemson or Bama or a Florida or anywhere like that. But I can see him at a lower end Power 5 school where he can go there. And like Katie said, I think he is a starter. I think he can go be a walk-in starter for some program and at the running back position. You know, all it takes is to be in the right system, man. If he's in the right system and he's confident, because that's what hurt him at Texas. His confidence was never consistent. He never got to the point where he had enough confidence where he actually had swagger.
Right.
Right? Swagger is just
confidence.
It was
false confidence.
It was, and it was always shattered. And BK brought up some of the instances, right? That TCU game, and then the Oklahoma game, that first play of the fumbles. So it was always shattered, and it always seemed like you said, yeah, it seemed like it was false confidence. He goes to where he plays with confidence consistently, like he did early on in his career at Texas. Man, Keyonte Ingram might find himself back on the path to going to the league again.
He could, and there's no doubt. I mean, just from talking to people, especially within that, and this is one of those things that you usually lie about. Whenever you're interviewing for a job, what's your biggest weakness? I just try too hard.
I care too much.
I care too much, and I'm too hard on myself. I'm my worst own critic. I may go home and not feel like I gave this company everything I should have on this Thursday when everyone was dressed down and people left to go get margarita lunches at 1. But I stayed till 7. But I still don't feel like I did enough because I'm that guy, right? He really was that guy. And I think that's how you get the fumble with TCU or Oklahoma, is that when you're not living up to what you think you should, what do you usually do? You try too hard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of it. I think you guys may be underselling it, and he may kill it at Houston or SMU. He starts at Wisconsin next year. I like Nakia Watson, mm-hmm. the back from Westlake here. He could start at Michigan next year. He could start at Auburn next year. I mean, he may not. But he would get some carries, and I think he's that dynamic of an athlete if he can get his body and get his mind back in that spot.
Yeah, he was a relatively high 4-star recruit. Once again, the class of 2018, he was the number one running back in the state of Texas. So there were lofty expectations, and there were plenty of offers for Keyonte Ingram coming out of high school, so maybe there is a chance he can be an impact player at a big type of university. I will say this. I obviously wish Keyonte Ingram all the best. I think that goes without saying, but I just want to say it based off what I'm about to say. I don't think Texas is going to miss him too much.
I don't either.
I just think this running back room, I mean, we all agree that Bijan Robinson needs to be the bell cow of this backfield, and we're all hopeful and optimistic that Steve Sarkisian is going to hashtag feed 5 and make Bijan a key part, maybe the keyest part of this offense next year. Rojo, you feel pretty good about him being a reliable number 2. You've got Jonathan Brooks coming in as a true freshman. Hopefully you can get LJ Johnson, who's the number 1 running back in the state for the class of 2021. He has yet to commit, but it apparently is between Texas and Texas A&M. Now, I know you need bodies, and we found that out at Texas in the past, KD.
David Benda.
Right, injuries have hurt this backfield.
Roshan.
In the past couple of years, but man, it just feels best for Keyonte Ingram in terms of his playing time, and it feels like it might be a good thing for Texas that they don't necessarily need to try to spread the wealth to a guy who isn't their best option.
So ideally, if this is my video game, I talk him back in, and I redshirt him, and he's a second and third string backup to Bijan his junior and senior year, right? That's not how life works.
No.
And so, especially for a guy who's that type of recruit and still has a high opinion of what his talent is, and I think rightfully so. I mean, if he gets back to what he was and gets really his body right, and like I said, his mind right, and the mind part is just being too hard on yourself. So that's a good – I'd rather work that direction than work trying to give a crap about yourself. Or so I still think there's a lot of talent there, and I hope he goes and does something well. But I'm with you. For where Texas is, I don't think it's going to be the end-all, be-all, especially if they get LJ. And you've got Bijan, you've got Roshan, you got the kid coming in. What's his name?
Jonathan Brooks.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to be okay there. And I also think the great thing about Sark Rod is not going to have a tough time selling skill guys, including running backs. If you look at his 1,000-yard rushers going all the way back to USC and the aforementioned Reggie Bush and Lindell White, but at Washington, Alabama, everywhere, he wants to actually have more balance. That was always the misnomer with Norm Chow, because they were throwing to these tight ends that were 32 years old and undersized and guys all over the place. They actually wanted to have some balance. So I don't think getting running backs with Stan Drayton, his reputation, Kyle Flood, the offensive line, his reputation, and Sark, I don't think you're going to have a problem getting running backs.
No, I agree, especially since they like to feature him so well, like you mentioned, and find so many different ways to get him to football, and he believes the running back position, the most underutilized weapon in the passing game. So he shows you off in so many different ways, can highlight your versatile skill set. So, yeah, I think for Keontae Ingram, this is definitely the right decision for him, and he's got to get back to the point where, I mean, I'm trying to think of plays where it felt like to me that Keontae Ingram was having fun. And I can't think of many, even when he made plays late down the stretch. I think there was a lot of pressure on him.
Yep.
And I don't think he got to the point where he was having fun playing the game. And I know that's hard because at Texas, there's a lot of pressure on these young men. I know all about it. And, you know, it is a business, not to a certain extent. It is a business, period. You guys know it's a part of the sports industrial complex, and no program runs it like a business more than the University of Texas. But you do have to still be able to go out there and have fun. And I'm trying to think of the plays that he made, the big plays. Man, I just didn't see that joy for him. So hopefully he finds that joy just playing the game somewhere without the pressure, where he can just kind of get back to the basics. And that's probably when he'll, you know, find the best football version of Keontae Ingram.
Interesting point, and you'd be able to detect that. And as I'm thinking about it, I think you're right. BK, is it Georgia? The run to the right side where they're kind of melting that thing away, where he had a big run and he had a couple good kickout blocks. And actually, it may not have been a run. It may have been more, I'm thinking Trey Newton. But there was a run to the right side where I felt like he almost exploded. And I thought, you could see the smile on his face. It's been a little while.
Man, I don't remember. I know he had a great game in the Alamo Bowl against Utah.
You had a long night.
Yeah, probably did on Bourbon Street. No doubt about that night. The Kansas State game in 2019 was his best game statistically, 139 yards and 2 touchdowns. But I think you're onto something there, Rod B. Maybe he just wasn't having as much fun as he would have liked. But, of course, we wish Keontae Ingram all the best. And like Rod said earlier, there's still a chance that he does withdraw from the transfer portal and come back to Texas. I would put that as doubtful, but obviously crazier things have happened. And we saw in the Tom Herman era, a few guys put their name in the portal. We kind of assumed they were gone, and then they withdrew and came back to Texas. So we'll see if that happens with Keontae.
I'm rooting for him. I blocked him on Twitter. I just have to do that. But
I saw you tweet at him a few times.
I am rooting for him, though.
Hey, don't let the door hit you on the way out, Keontae.
No, I mean, all Texas fans kidding around about that. Obviously, all Texas fans should look at that and say, I hope you do well, man.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So Keontae Ingram, a potential departure from the 40 Acres. A couple of coaches, or at least coaching staff members who were a part of Tom Herman's staff the last few years, are also apparently on their way out. According to Inside Texas, Derek Chang, who has been the director of player personnel, he will not be retained by Steve Sarkisian. And also chief of staff, I think that's hilarious that college football programs have a chief of staff. And I would guess it's only like the blue bloods, like the elites who have a lot of money to spend and can hire all sorts of random assistants and support staff guys.
And how long are we going to be able to keep that title?
Chief of staff?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
The chief part.
The chief part, offensive to the Native Americans?
I don't know.
That's true. They're about to be the Kansas City football team in a couple of years. We're going to have two football teams in the NFL in the not-too-distant future. But Fernando Lovo is leaving Texas to join Urban Meyer's staff in Jacksonville. I don't think we got any word on whether or not Sark wanted to bring Lovo back, but Lovo was Tom Herman's right-hand man. He actually followed Tom Herman from Houston, so he had been working with Tom for a while. And he also worked under Urban Meyer before working under Tom Herman. So he's got a previous relationship with Urban Meyer. So not on-field assistant coaches, KD, but support staff guys and guys who helped out with recruiting the last few years.
So I knew Chang at LHN. He actually was an ESPN guy and was a producer. And a lot of it was about film and being able to, a lot of the good stuff you'd see on ESPN. They actually have guys that were either in the recruiting world or be able to break down film and make it look good on TV. And Derek's a really good guy, really good at what he does. He was connected, so he was at Ohio State with Herman and Urban Meyer, and then came down to LHN for a year or two, and then when Herman got the job, moved over. And so everything I've talked about with the foundation being built, you may have heard that, and now you see this news, and you go, oh, well, that foundation's gone. No. We didn't have any of this stuff. We just started to do this. So it doesn't mean that it's going to be, you're not going to try and accelerate that or improve what has been done. But the fact that you already have something built is a good thing. The fact that we already have that and you can come in and they don't have to create a room and for him, he's just getting more his guys, which will be the Alabama guys. Rod, it's not rebuilding from scratch or just starting from scratch, which is what Tom Herman had to do when he hired Derek Chang and put all that together and tried to replicate what they did at Ohio State. Saban has been doing the same thing, and Ohio State, I think, took it from them. I think Alabama was the first one on that really put together this professional staff of people that are doing stuff that coaches used to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's... At one point, Texas was being run like a mom-and-pop shop.
Yep.
If you just kind of look at the way they were running their personnel department. And I say personnel department. It's not professional, but that's what's big. That's why they do have a chief of staff now. And as KD mentioned, you know, now the model is, no, you want to basically run your program, if you can, a blue blood, and you can afford it, like an NFL front office.
Yep.
And that is the model that Sark's going to bring in. And God bless Mack Brown. Mack Brown was actually against the arms race. He intentionally didn't want to jump into the thrust Texas into the arms race of the beefing up your support staff and continue to grow the support staff. And that's what Nick Saban has done because there are less limits. And I think now there are some NCAA limits maybe on the support staff. But before that, there weren't a lot of limits on support staff. That was an advantage for the blue bloods because they can hire these huge professional personnel departments. And that apply to the coaching limits and all the stuff you have to do. Now they have changed some of those rules, but it still gives you a huge advantage, especially in the recruiting game. And I'm with you. Derek Chang and Brian Carrington, also a part of that department. They did a really, really good job. But Sark's going to bring in something that's going to be next level because he's going to be closer to replicating what Saban actually did too.
No doubt about that. That's what the report from Inside Texas said, that he's expected to move to a more Alabama model for the personnel department here at Texas. It's a good team to copy. Obviously, we'll see if it works. It's tough to replicate, but it's a good team to try to replicate.
The Urban Meyer model wasn't terrible either, by the way.
No, it wasn't.
That's basically what it was before.
Exactly. and that got it started. So as I always talk about, guys, when I give John McAvitt credit for bringing us a real passing game in 92, well, it wasn't perfect, and it ended in 97, but I can still give him credit for kind of building that a little bit. And by the way, you can't replicate, at least I hope we don't, everything Alabama does.
No, that's true. Yeah.
What'd you do?
We'll keep the siblings out of this one. All right, it's the triple option with RBKD. Oh, is that not what you were talking about?
No, but that was good.
Oh, thanks. I think I might lose my job over that one, but both. It's worth it. All right, it's the triple option with RBKD. Hey, it's my favorite weekend of the NFL season, the divisional round of the playoffs. Starting tomorrow, will the dogs be biting this weekend? We discuss next.
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. It is a Country Music Friday edition of the Triple Option with RBKD. You can always hit us up via Twitter. Kevin Dunn is at KevinDunn01. BK is at Brad Keltner in the Twitterverse. And I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. All right, gentlemen, lots of NFL news to get to. We have coaching hires to talk about. We got the divisional round coming up this weekend. Let's start with the divisional round, see if we can work our way to the coaching news that happened earlier today. All right, first on Saturday, I don't know which one of these matchups intrigues you the most. You got the Rams, 10-6 Rams at the Packers, 13-3 Packers. Packers are a 6.5-point favorite. Last time I looked at it, BK, you are our gambling aficionado on the show. I believe it's 6.5 now. Have you seen it move? Is it different than that? You seen it lately?
The cousin has seen it at 6.5, and he thinks it's still there.
Okay, there you go. All right, gentlemen, is this where, because I know we're looking for the upset, right? We're trying to find where's the most likely upset this weekend. We know there's probably going to be one. We just don't know where it is. Can the Rams and that defense, and it is the best defense in the league, and it's not even close. They are first in scoring defense, first in total defense, first in passing defense. They're second in the NFL in sacks. They are first in fewest explosive plays allowed, third in third down defense, fifth in explosive runs allowed. They're elite. I'll just put it that way. There is some damage done to Aaron Donald. He's dealing with a rib injury or a core injury, so that's a concern. Of course, Jared Goff has the 3 screws in his thumb, so he's dealing with the hand injury, so that could be a concern too, but that defense is so impressive. They just keep coasting on it. BK, I'll start with you. How likely is it that the Rams could upset the Packers at Lambeau?
Yeah, I mean, first of all 4 of these games are awesome, and I love this round of the playoffs. It's my favorite weekend of NFL football because you weed out some of the bad teams that you get in the wild card round, right? Like, we all knew the Saints were going to beat the Bears. We all knew the Bucks were going to beat Taylor Heineken and the Washington football team. This is all 4 of these matchups, I think, could go either way. I really do believe that. And yeah, I mean, you brought it up, the Rams defense against the Packers offense. Green Bay, the number 1 scoring offense in football this year. But you've got some great individual matchups as well. The big one, Devontae Adams against Jalen Ramsey, right? I mean, Devontae Adams has been special this year. Some think he's the best wide receiver in football. I think he had the best season for a wide receiver in the league this year.
He did.
And then Jalen Ramsey is a spectacular all-pro corner as well. And those guys both talk a little bit too, so maybe some extracurricular stuff going on. But Green Bay also had the best offensive line in football. And, Rod, you brought up how good Aaron Donald and that Rams pass rush has been. Like, there are just so many elite versus elite. KD, this is Goliath v. Goliath when we're talking about the Packers offense led by Aaron Rodgers and the Rams defense led by Aaron Donald. That's going to be some fun matchups tomorrow afternoon.
It will be. They lost their tackle, the Packers did, who was having a hell of a year.
Yes.
And that could be, his name's slipping me right now, but that could be big. This Rams team is weird, and watching them this year, I don't think McVay did a good job with Goff, and maybe he had done such a good job with Goff of making him look better than he was in previous years that there's some of that. But this is a 12 personnel, run-oriented team, and they do run, man. And Cam Akers has kind of taken that different role for them. Can they get enough with Goff and that passing attack to actually get something done? Heineken, I believe, as you call them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it is, right?
Yeah, Heineke, but yeah, you know, you can add the end if
close
you want.
Enough. It's Friday. He's gonna
be out, so we'll kind of see how they play this. I'm excited, though, to see this Rams defense. And like you said, so Ramsey and Adams, I do think Adams has been the best receiver in the NFL this year. But Ramsey and Adams were on a podcast, and it was pretty cool to hear them go back and forth. They respect each other so much. There is a lot of
respect.
Yeah, and they should. There's a lot of respect. Usually you see those positions at the top even trash talk and kind of denigrate the other and not give them the value that they have. So I actually am excited about that game. I think the Packers win that thing. And then the other Saturday matchup, I mean, Ravens-Bills, this should be a lot of fun. I mean, the Ravens still, I feel like guys were 2 or 3 years into this experiment, and you just don't know. We talk about linear progress. There's been up and down, and obviously what you had last year. But, BK, I'm curious kind of just to see how this whole thing plays out, because I think this will be a physical game. We talk about Josh Allen. He holds the ball longer than anyone. Buffalo's favored by 2.5. I don't know who to take in this.
Yeah, I mean, the Ravens are playing really, really well. They've won 6 straight since all their COVID issues that they had midway through the season, and their defense has really picked it up. They've allowed less than 20 points in 6 of their last 7 games, and they shut down Derrick Henry last week. I mean, we talked about for Baltimore to win that game in Nashville, they needed to contain Derrick Henry. No, they did way more than contain Derrick Henry. They shut him down last week, and they shut down that Tennessee offense that had been playing really, really well. But like you said, I mean, Josh Allen holds the ball for a long time. The Ravens blitz more than any team in football.
It's a great setup.
But Josh Allen was blitzed more than any quarterback in football. And Rod, I mean, we've talked about it. Josh Allen had maybe the third best year of any quarterback in football this season. I mean, he was spectacular. So the blitz hasn't gotten to him just yet. I get why the line's so close. I mean, Buffalo struggled a little bit. Look, Indianapolis is a good football team, but Buffalo didn't look all that great last week. And meanwhile, Baltimore looked pretty dominant, especially on defense. So I think there's definitely a shot for Baltimore to pull this one off in Orchard Park tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a bad matchup, I think, for Buffalo. And I'm not saying Buffalo's going to lose the game, but it is a bad matchup. And I think, honestly, with Lamar Jackson hot down the stretch, it's probably a bad matchup for a lot of teams. I think some people were hoping that Lamar Jackson and the Ravens would have got knocked off because defensively, like you said, they're very aggressive. They blitz a ton, which means they play a ton of cover zero and cover one, man-to-man. Josh Allen, watch him scrambling. No two quarterbacks in the NFL have actually rushed for more yards in the last 2 years than Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson, of course, has rushed for more yards in the last 3 years, actually, than any quarterback in NFL history. But right behind him is Josh Allen. So when those cornerbacks of the Ravens and the DBs turn their backs because they're playing man-to-man coverage and they're focusing on the wide receivers, watch Josh Allen scrambling. Do they have a spy that can spy him effectively? If they don't, you can see Josh Allen get some effective yards, keep drives alive. If they got an effective spy, though, this could end up being a bad matchup. The Ravens have really good DBs that can match up with Cole Beasley. Stephon Diggs, a different discussion. I don't know if there's anybody that can really cover him. Honestly, saying that, nobody can cover Stephon Diggs. Jalen Ramsey actually did a really good job against Stephon Diggs in week 3, I believe it was, when he was guarding him. But that he's a shutdown corner, and there are very few of those. I think it'll come down to, can the wide receivers get open on man-to-man coverage, and how often can they get to Josh Allen before he scrambles out of the pocket and keeps drives alive?
John Harbaugh, KD, 8-5 in road games in the postseason. He's got more playoff road wins than any coach in the history of the NFL, so he's not going to be fazed by this moment at all.
No, and the road games, too, are different now.
Yeah.
So you even throw that in there a little bit more. But they had a little bit of a spunk and a spirit to them, obviously, after the win last week. And it does feel like he even said that. He said, this is the biggest win and the most important win of my life.
Wow.
Thought, wait a minute. What about the pass interference against San Francisco?
Didn't he win a Super Bowl once?
Yeah, exactly. That game.
A little bit of hyperbole there, huh?
Yeah. Well, and I may describe that game.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know.
You got a power outage to help you out.
from a favorite's point of view. But I do think that there is something special to this team. And I'm leaning with them guys to win this thing.
Could snow tomorrow, both games up at Lambeau Field and in Buffalo. I guess no real surprise when you think about those two cities, but we could have some weather conditions in both of these games. What about Sunday, guys? Cleveland pulled off a big upset last week, their first playoff win in 432 years, I think. They are going to Arrowhead to take on Kansas City. Rod B., the Chiefs, a 10-point favorite. Let me give you all this.
Wow.
The Chiefs haven't won a game by more than 7 since week 8.
I know.
So obviously they were, you know, winning games. They had the best record in the NFL this year. There's no doubt that they're good. They're the reigning Super Bowl champs. But Rod B., you know, they haven't been blowing teams out. So it feels like Cleveland can at least keep this one close Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, there's a belief that the Chiefs have been bored all year long.
Right.
There's this, and I don't know if it's true or not. They are a really impressive team, and it is a little bewildering as to why they have played to their competition lately. We know the NFL, we know all of those teams they play down the stretch aren't as good. They aren't basically 7 points or one score good within, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs. They're not that impressive. So I don't know. Maybe they have been bored. If not, then they come out rusty. This thing could get interesting. I think it'll be within 10 points. So, man, 10 points in a playoff game.
Yeah.
That Yeah, that's a lot. But if Kansas City has been toying with the NFL the last 8-9 weeks, I could see them coming out and just blowing the doors off the Browns. I could see it happening. It's the Kansas City Chiefs that got six.
Yeah, it is. And I totally get that. But 10 points, considering kind of who they've been, I mean, I'm picking them to win this thing, but they've been in a lot of tight games. And I don't think they are as complete as it's almost impossible with the salary cap to be as complete as a team to where, BK, I'm going to lay 10 in a playoff game like this with a team that has some confidence and some skill.
Yeah, Andy Reid, 22-5 coming off byes in his career. I think part of that is going into the Vegas line as well. But no Sammy Watkins for the Chiefs on Sunday. They ruled him out earlier today. And also Clyde Edwards-Helaire, questionable for Sunday. So we'll see. A couple of weapons for that Chief offense might not be able to go.
Gay is out, too.
Le'Veon Bell still there with them? Isn't he still active?
Yes.
Forget all about him.
I know. He's an afterthought on that offense. Exactly. What about the game of the weekend, at least on paper, right? I mean, you've got two Hall of Famers, two of the best quarterbacks of all time, duking it out for the first time ever in the postseason. Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers taking on Austin's own Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints. It could be Drew Brees' last game, guys. There's the thought that he's going to hang him up after this season. How about this for Tom Brady, KD? He's going for his 14th conference championship game appearance.
Unbelievable.
Can you believe that? I mean, it just doesn't even make sense.
No.
It's not fair. But the Saints dominated both matchups in the regular season. A couple of double-digit wins, including a 38-3 beatdown of Tampa Bay earlier in the year. But the Bucs have won 5 in a row. They're playing some good football. Obviously, they played pretty well last week against Washington. Saints a 3-point favorite, KD.
Yeah, and understandably so, even with the regular season. Bucs are playing well right now. I think they figured some stuff out. Brown does give them something to go with Godwin, obviously the tight ends and Gronk and Brait. And then you got Mike Evans you can throw it up to. I mean, are they complete enough? And we talked about how important the Tristan Wirfs draft was going to be because their offensive line was such a problem. And it's gotten better, but I'm always curious if you get pressure and you get to Tom Brady, and this is a pretty complete Saints team. Rod, I get being a 3-point favorite, and I'm leaning with the Saints right now. We'll give our picks maybe a little bit later, but I just don't. I do think this is going to be a tight game, and I don't think it's going to be a blowout like the one we saw. Was that the second game, regular season game they played?
Was that week 9?
Yeah, week 9, I believe.
Todd Bowles' defense, for some reason, it just doesn't match up well with Sean Payton's offense.
No.
In that week 9 performance, he toyed with him. He allowed him to pick his poison. He said, listen, I'm going to go heavy personnel, which he did. We know nobody plays more personnel packages and formations than the Saints. And when Tampa Bay tried to match up with heavy personnel with their 40 with more linebackers on the field, they would just try to expose those linebackers in coverage. They targeted Levante David and Devin White 18 times in that week 9 matchup, and they completed 16 passes for 136 yards and 2 touchdowns, mostly with tight ends and running backs. And then when they put DBs on the field to match up with the tight ends in the passing game, they would just run Taysom Hill and Alvin Kamara in the running game. So I just kind of see that happening again. I think the Saints are going to beat them. I don't know if they're going to roll, but they're going to win.
Yeah, the matchup is favorable for New Orleans, but the postseason has not been kind to the Saints over the last half decade or so. They have all these heartbreaking losses.
Tom Brady's
the king of delivering those heartbreaking losses, right? That's what he does, but should be a fun one. We'll give our official picks in the 6 o'clock hour for those games. Quick coaching news. We don't have time to really dive in, but if you missed it, Urban Meyer's going to Jacksonville. Robert Saleh, the highly touted 49ers defensive coordinator, going to the Jets. Sorry about that one, KD.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that.
And the least surprising news in the history of the NFL, guys, Josh Gordon has been suspended indefinitely again.
But weed's off the table.
What?
He broke the protocols for reinstatement for the umpteenth time. So there you go. Yeah, that one just dropped a few minutes ago. So there you go. Some NFL conversation here on the Triple Option with RBKD. We'll keep things in the NFL, but bring him here to the state of Texas. Boy, right before we got on the air today, Deshaun Watson, another very cryptic tweet. Could this thing be heading down a James Harden path? We'll discuss next.
For
first pub we could stagger to. Country Music Friday here on Triple Option with RBKD. Beautiful day here in Austin, Texas. Hopefully you're getting your weekend already started and doing it with us. We appreciate that. Get to hornfm.com if you want to podcast anything. Don't forget, too, you got, if you're a Cowboys fan, you got $100 waiting for you there. Gift card to their website and to their gift shop. So all you got to do is get to hornfm.com. The Cowboys are dealing with their own stuff. Texans, it's a different scenario and situation right now, and we've talked about it. It really seems to focus on the relationship of Deshaun Watson and this organization, whether it's Caserio who's coming in or Cal McNair. And, guys, we've seen some tweets that have worried Texans fans, and we have another one. This was today where Deshaun Watson posted on Twitter, "I was on 2, then I took it to 10. The numbers are related to a recent report from Adam Schefter where in the 2017 first-round pick kind of had the anger level of a 2 and then was able to take it to a 10. Rod, we've been, you know, we don't like to focus too much on maybe a tweet day to day, but sometimes you can take something from it, and this is no bueno for y'all. You're trying to calm the seas, and it doesn't seem like right now Deshaun Watson's very happy with them.
Is there a time? Is that today that tweet came out?
Today. It says, yeah, on Friday.
Yeah, 2:24
okay,
p.m.
Okay, so that was – yeah, so that's probably in response to the – I think either John McClain or Cron.com is where the story was, where – Cal McNair, the owner of the Texans, was asked point blank about Jack Easterby because, of course, Andre Johnson mentioned Jack Easterby in that tweet that just absolutely obliterated the Texans. Talk about them wasting the careers of their best players and named Jack Easterby. And I'll read the excerpt from it from the Chronicle piece. Said, despite widespread criticism of Easterby, including by Johnson, and recent reports that he could be out after 2 seasons, that was by Peter King recently. He said that, I think, yesterday. It says, McNair repeated his support of his executive vice president of football operations, who will continue to have a significant role on his side of the organization. Asked if he would fire Easterby, McNair said no. Asked if Easterby would be resigning, he said, no, not that I know of. The scrutiny on Jack is really unjustified, McNair said. Jack was put into that role, the executive VP of football operations. He said he was put into that role the organization needed by me. If missteps were made during that process, we'll own those within our building. Jack will return to the role he was brought here for and what he grew into after he got here, end quote. Mm. So... And Cal McNair did say he texted Deshaun Watson. So I guess he thinks everything is good because he texted Deshaun Watson. But as we
did
all
Deshaun
know,
respond or he just sent a text and he's like, oh, okay, we're good now. We're on
unclear.
Good terms.
Unclear, actually. It said, Deshaun, this is what McNair said. Deshaun and I connected over text since he's returned from vacation. I believe in dealing with the personnel issues directly with the players, but in conjunction with our general manager, Deshaun, it's no secret that he's disappointed in the communication during the hiring process. So he's connected. I don't know what that means. I'm with you. Why text? Y'all should be having phone conversations at the least. At the very least, you should be talking to your franchise quarterback, the face of your organization, not texting with him during this very fragile time. So I don't know. It's going to get volatile, man. It's going
to
get crazy.
I bet the text conversation was Cal McNair sent a text to Deshaun Watson saying Easterby staying, and Deshaun just responded with a thumbs down. That was the whole conversation. Deshaun Watson disliked the text, and that's Cal McNair's definition of, oh, yeah, we connected over text.
Connected.
It's all good. This
and
is not
even tweeting the thumbs or texting it back, just putting it on the thing above,
just
right?
Just disliking it, yeah. And, I mean, this is bad for Houston.
It's crazy,
I mean,
man.
They just saw this happen with James Harden, right, the other superstar down in H-Town. And it's a little bit different. It's a little bit apples to oranges with basketball and football because basketball players have way more power than football players do. But, I mean, Deshaun Watson can be disgruntled. He can create some problems within that locker room. I didn't expect him, and I still don't expect him to be that type of guy, but there's a long offseason ahead. And if more and more stories keep coming out like this where Deshaun Watson is clearly frustrated with what's going on in Houston and clearly wants out, I don't know if a new general manager, Nick Caserio, wants to deal with that stuff as he's trying to rebuild the team. So, obviously, on the surface, yeah, you want to keep Deshaun Watson because he's a top-five quarterback in the league. He's young. He's under contract. You can build around that guy. But if he's just going to keep doing this, KD, and I don't blame him, by the way. I don't super blame Deshaun Watson. It's a little, you know, childish, and you could say, well, he's under contract, so he should, you know, just play football. Like, that's his job. He's not, he was never told he's going to make personnel decisions or head coaching decisions or anything like that. I understand his frustration, but, you know, I don't know if that's something you want to deal with if you're really trying to build a team or rebuild a team like Nick Caserio is being tasked to do.
No, and I'm glad you kind of separated that, because Deshaun Watson is a hell of a lot more likable if you're the average sports fan who's not a Houston fan and just likes sports than James Harden.
Oh, yeah.
Is. James Harden is the problem with the NBA. He is the problem. Now, not just solely him, but what his behavior is a microcosm of what we see there. And with Deshaun Watson, and I'm not saying the Rockets did everything perfectly, but with the Texans, this is more of an S show, and this is more of their problem. And yeah, he may not be dealing with it perfectly or as well as some people want, but there's a much more ride there. I can understand, as someone who doesn't have a dog in this fight, I understand his frustration probably more than I do James Harden. Although I also, I'm not a big strip club guy, so James Harden's frustration is different with the pandemic, too. So I need to be fair about that.
Yeah, I think times are changing, right? We see this even at the college football level with the player empowerment movement and, you know, the name, image, and likeness starting to take effect. There is even, and you talked about it the other day, KD, even with Urban Meyer, there was some concern that Urban Meyer did not like the seismic shift that was happening at the college level with players having more power and going to have representation.
Opting
that's
out.
Going to change everything drastically. Opting out, transfer portal, all those different things to give the players more rights. And, I think at the NFL level, and we haven't seen a lot of it, but I think you're going to see more of it, where quarterbacks want to have a say. There's a recent report that Russell Wilson, he wants to have a say in the offensive coordinator hire of the Seattle Seahawks. He said that publicly. This is Russell Wilson. This guy is about as meek as they come. Mm-hmm. He's a team guy. He's a team rah-rah guy. He's a company man. Always has been a company man. And yet he's saying, no. This is directly affecting my legacy. This is directly affecting my ability to be effective and be the best version of myself and be the best player. I think I could be the best quarterback in the league, and I have a ceiling because of the guy that you're going to hire, because we don't have the we don't have alignment, right? We don't see the field. We don't see the offense in the same light. And Patrick Mahomes, you know, people made fun of them, but those reports that, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs called Patrick Mahomes and asked him, hey, who do you think we should pick for our first round pick? And he said Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and they picked Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And in the Super Bowl, when it was 3rd and 15, it was Patrick Mahomes who suggested the play, the 231 Wasp, whatever they call it. All right, he suggested that play. It ended up being a big play to Tyreek Hill, maybe the play of the Super Bowl. More and more, these quarterbacks who are the faces of these franchises who are making this big money, I think they're going to want to have a say, or at least they're going to want the respect of acknowledging that, you know, you would at least want to know what they think, acknowledging their opinion about these very important decisions in the front office and as a head coach and even offensive coordinator.
I love this quote from Cal McNair. Look, what's the number one request right now from Houston Texans fans? It's to get rid of Jack Easterby, right? I mean, I think every single Texans fan wants to get rid of Easter Fraud or Littlefinger or whatever the hell you want to call him. The Bad Bunny. Yeah, you dropped that one on us a few days ago, Rod B. How about this quote, though, from Cal McNair? Quote, if players, media, and fans are upset, that's on me, and I'll apologize for my actions or communications that created mistrust. I accept the fans' frustration. I'll listen and learn, end quote. Hey, Cal McNair, if you really want to listen to the fans, you fire Jack Easterby, because every single fan wants that to be done. So if you're really making a plea to the fans that I'm going to start listening to y'all and I'm going to learn from the mistakes I've made in the past, that means you're going to get rid of Jack Easterby and start to turn things around down there, because this guy is running this franchise into the ground.
You would think, but Rod alluded to it the other day, that it, because of the spiritual connection, I mean, a lot of these people look at Jack Easterby unlike they look at anyone else in their life.
Yeah, oh, I don't think it's going to happen, and it might be spiritual related, it might be something else, I don't know what it is, but it doesn't seem like Jack Easterby's going anywhere, and hell, it almost looks like it's turning into a Deshaun Watson or Jack Easterby type of thing, and if you choose a team chaplain over one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL who's also 25, 26 years old, that's the dumbest thing ever.
You know,
and Cal McNair should be jailed. That's crimes against the Texans organization. Put his ass in jail.
Guys, guys, I may have been wrong. I think my prediction I actually may have given it too much time when I said that at some point here, Easterby is going to be the most hated clergyman in the city over Joel Osteen. I thought that was going to be tough. We're going to get this done quickly, though.
I think it's already done.
Is it already done?
I think it's already done. Rod, what about you? You're the H-town guy.
It hadn't been
guy.
Flooding, though.
No.
One guy literally wouldn't help people during a crisis where people could – their lives were in danger.
Fair.
People were homeless, the families that didn't have homes,
yes.
And that guy wouldn't open up his church. So I'll still say Joel Osteen is still the most despicable man of God in H-Town.
You don't have to bring facts into this, Rod. Come on, man. That doesn't
but you're right. Fans
narrative.
Don't care about that. Yeah. Fans don't care about that.
No, I think Rod is right. I think fans, though, maybe on your side, BK.
No doubt. We'll take your thoughts. If you are a Texans fan and you want to chime in, the Specs text line 337-3776. We were going to play some of the Sark audio from Scott Van Pelt on SportsCenter a couple of nights ago. Sark was also on with Colin Cowherd yesterday. We've got that in the bank. We might get to that, but we've got some updated defensive coordinator news we need to get to. One more name out there, a potential candidate for the Longhorns, and a national college football writer actually says this mystery candidate is the favorite to be the next DC at Texas. We'll tell you who it is next.